You're listening to Hogwarts Radio, MuggleNet's Harry Potter podcast, bringing you the latest from around the wizarding world. This is episode 164 for February 1st, 2015. Jerry. That's right. Welcome back to Hogwarts Radio. This is episode 164. I'm Terrence Pinkston.
I'm Marissa Reynolds.
I'm Gina Marie.
And we're back this week to discuss the latest trends and all that fun news and everything good in the Harry Potter world. Gina, are you living vicariously through Eric's tweets?
Tweets and tags.
I know. Before we started recording, he tweeted what he had for lunch, and I'm kind of sitting over here just drooling in my cup of coffee over what he just posted. He's at the Three Broomsticks right now, right?
Yes, and for those who don't know why he's there, he's at the HP celebration held by Universal Studios for Harry Potter fans.
Yeah, and have you seen some of the pictures of the massive amount of people that are there?
I didn't think it was that big. I actually haven't seen the pictures, but I didn't think there were that many tickets, I should say. If it's in the park, like right now, the park's open to everyone.
So there's this place in Universal Studios that's called the Main Plaza, the Music Stage or something like that. Yesterday, they showed Sorcerer's Stone on three huge screens there. Last night, they were having people line up as the introductions of the stars came through, and there was just so many people there. It was crazy. There was a picture that I saw, just this massive amount of people confined into a small space. Well, it's not really a small space. It looks like it, but I bet you could fit, at least a couple thousand people there. I hadn't seen that many people since, Deathly Hallows Part 2. I mean, it was a ton of people. But anyway, that's going on right now in Orlando, Florida. So we'll have a wrap-up and discussion about it on next week's episode. But let's get to a little bit of news that we have. Actually, it's a big piece of news that we got this past week. Emma Watson is to star in a live-action Beauty and the Beast film by Disney. Who is excited for this?
I am. I'm so excited. Beauty and the Beast, Belle has always been my favorite princess. This is my favorite Disney princess movie when I was a kid and still is. And I'm just so excited.
I can't wait.
She's probably my second favorite Disney princess. So
who's your first?
I'm kind of surprised. The Little Mermaid.
Oh, okay.
Just because I wore the heck out of that VHS. I'm kind of surprised she took it because it's not really similar to Hermione, but at the same time, there's a lot of character similarities. I'm kind of surprised she took it for that reason. Yeah. But I'm excited that she did.
Emma's going to be playing the lead role of Belle. And the original animated musical was released by Disney in 1991 and was later adapted into a Broadway musical, which I have yet to see. I would love to be able to go see this thing on Broadway. But
it's awesome.
Yeah, I'll settle for the big screen. You've seen it, Gina, on Broadway?
Not on Broadway, but when it was on tour in Chicago. When I remember seeing it a couple times when I was little. Different tours. I don't know why, but I remember my mom taking me, so it was really good.
Was it really musical, or was it just more of a storytelling?
The musical has more songs than are in the movie. Also, I did this in college. I forgot about that. And there are different songs, but when we were doing it in college, I didn't remember the songs from when I was little, and I thought I was going to hate them, but I actually really loved the additional songs. Anytime you can see it, I highly recommend, whether it's a community version or whatever, go see that show. But I'm excited for this movie.
Yeah, I really am too, because Belle is my favorite Disney princess, and Emma is really excited about it too. She wrote on her Facebook, she goes, "I'm finally able to tell you that I will be playing Belle in Disney's new live action Beauty and the Beast. It was such a big part of my growing up. It almost feels surreal that I'll get to dance to Be Our Guest and sing something there. My 6-year-old self is on the ceiling, heart bursting. Time to start some singing lessons. I can't wait for you to see it. That's something I'm interested in. I want to hear Emma sing. I want to hear her sing these songs.
Yeah, I think it's kind of crap that she said, time to start some singing lessons.
Oh, come on.
I have a feeling she's been working on that for some time.
Really?
That's why when she says start, I'm like, I bet you've had some minor training.
Have we? We've never heard her sing, have we? In any of her projects, any of her films
or
anything?
She sang for a snippet in, was it Order of the, no, Goblet of Fire. They like run through the forest singing Hogwarts, Hogwarts,
oh.
Huggy, Huggy, Hogwarts.
Yeah, and isn't there like a deleted scene where they're singing the school song and she's just like belting it out?
I don't think I've seen that deleted scene.
Oh my gosh,
but
yeah,
I haven't
either.
There. I know it's out there. Okay. I think I've seen most of it, but I don't remember noticing her. I could be wrong. She's probably front and center.
I'm second guessing myself.
She's going to go YouTube it.
But it's really, it's very Hermione for her to be belting it. That's why I could see that happening.
I think it's like they're all in the Great Hall, and it's supposed to be a throwback to the books where they're all singing differently, but it's actually all one song, kind of like they do in the forest. But yeah, Hermione's just like, going at it. It's great. It's not that she's bad or anything. She's actually really good. But
what qualities of Belle do we see in Emma? Why do we feel that she would, that, why are we so excited that she's such a great choice for this role?
Because she's an awesome actress and it's a good Disney princess. So
And books.
Why not somebody like, let's say, Ariel?
Because that's an April Fool's Day joke.
I know it is. But I mean, I'm just trying to say, why are we so excited for this? Is it because this?
I think it's because she's a beloved actress of ours, and it's a beloved character that a lot of book nerds, especially our age, like because of the book adaptations of it and the Disney adaptations of it. To have a live action Disney version of this with one of our favorite actresses that we know growing up, that we know is probably attached to these books as much as we are, and book and movie and musicals as we are, it's nice to know.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it is too that it's really cool that one of our favorite heroines growing up is now playing a Disney princess.
Mm-hmm.
And not only just a Disney princess, but Belle specifically, because we do unfortunately, make that connection between Hermione and Emma. Like, it's completely different people, but like they both like to read, and her graduating from Brown, her just being so very like book smart and worried about her schooling through filming Harry Potter, that it's very cool to see her playing this Disney princess that we associate with knowledge and learning and reading.
We're going to be seeing her inner Hermione come out in this one whenever, because Belle is very bookish, you know, and whenever she goes into that library that he gives her, you know, he says, it's yours now. And she just looks and there's these mountains and mountains of books like everywhere.
That is everyone's dream library.
There's no date to begin production, but as soon as we hear any more on this story and Emma, we'll be sure to let you know. Keep you updated with that over at MuggleNet. Next news story is Robbie Coltrane, playing Rubeus Hagrid in the Harry Potter films, is hospitalized. It's okay. He had the flu. The media blew it out of proportion. He'll be fine. He'll be okay. He's in the hospital right now. But, I mean, he was on his way to the Harry Potter celebration, and he fell ill on the flight. Just as a precaution, they took him to the hospital. He has the flu. Like I said, he'll be fine.
Well, I mean, this has never happened before. The media blowing something out of proportion.
I know. It hasn't.
But yeah, they did. There was all kinds of news stories. And it's just like, okay, he had the sniffles.
Harry Potter star on his deathbed. You know, come on. It's stretching it.
I do hope he's feeling better, though, because being sick sucks.
I know.
Can you think about being sick in a foreign country?
Oh, that's got to be so uncomfortable, doesn't it?
That has to be the worst.
But we do hope that Robbie makes a speedy recovery and is able to attend other Harry Potter celebrations in the future. Last week, we had a discussion about houses, and it was a very good discussion about the Sorting Hat and things like that. Generated a lot of other conversations within our listener community. And Marissa had this conversation that was transcribed and sent to her. Marissa, you want to talk about this a little bit?
Yeah. So being a chemist, I work in an atmosphere of a whole bunch of other nerds, which is great. I love it. But one of my coworkers well, all of my coworkers know that I do this podcast. And one of them, John, was asking me, hey, have you guys recorded lately? What'd you guys talk about? And I started telling him about our discussion from last week with transferring houses and everything. And we kind of discussed it, but it turned into more of a discussion on the actual sorting hat itself. And I was trying to make my case in that it's not necessarily all to do with the sorting hat, my opinions of transferring houses. I think it's more to do with how you get along with the other people physically and emotionally.
Right.
Because you live with them. But we got on the topic of the sorting hat and, you know, whether we sort too early, like Grayson thought. But he's just kind of a casual fan. And he actually went home and has another friend that's a huge Potterhead. Her name is Alyssa. And so he got to talking to her on Facebook and he sent me the transcripts of their conversation. And there was one part that I really liked and kind of wanted to share, and it was from Alyssa, and they had been talking about how things that John and I had talked about how the sorting hat was created, but she says, the hat cannot know what is to happen in the lives of those it reads. It must follow a set of algorithms to determine where a person would best fit. It's also a fairly arbitrary system. It sorts who the four founders would have liked to teach the most, not whether people will be good or brave or evil or smart or especially good at finding. So that was kind of my arguments last week. And when I was talking with John, was people, in my opinion, I think people put a lot more stock into what the sorting hat says and give it a lot more credit than they should. Because if you think back to the way it was created, you had the four founders of the four houses, and when they were alive, they would literally pick the students that they wanted in their house. So it was like picking for sports, you know, when you're in PE and like elementary school and high school and everything.
God, that would suck to be last. It's like you're last, you go to Hufflepuff. I mean,
well, that's pretty much what it is.
Yeah,
I mean, not
yeah.
to be burning Hufflepuff or anything, but Helga Hufflepuff said, well, I'll take the rest.
Well, so at the same time, that's not necessarily true, because maybe there weren't enough brave kids that year. Maybe there weren't enough clever kids that year.
It was just kind of like a system where, you know, the founders were like, oh, you look like you would be a valuable member of my team. Let me bring you over. You know, it was like that. It didn't seem like there was any kind of breakdown in the selection process.
Right. It was like the four founders got together and said, okay, I want this one. Your turn. Okay, I want this person.
Right.
Your turn. And just kind of went around and picked all these students that they wanted to teach.
Yeah.
When they decided to create the sorting hat, they took the hat off Godric Gryffindor's head. And I kind of like the way John worded this, so I'm going to use his wording and give him credit. It was like they uploaded their consciousness to this hard drive within the sorting hat.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So it's the four founders' consciousness, their personalities and thoughts are stored in the sorting hat. And then the sorting hat uses that knowledge to put these students into the house. So it's still like these four founders are saying, oh, yeah, that sounds like a good person for my house. I want them.
I wonder if that kind of magic can be duplicated, you know, to where it can be used like in other places. Like, think about that same kind of selection process for like your career. Whenever you graduate from Hogwarts, okay, you go to the Ministry of Magic and you put on like a, I don't know, like a something else, like a hat or a cloak or something like that. And this cloak or this hat or this magical object tells you what you're going to be.
I feel that people put a lot more confidence in the hat by saying, oh, the hat's never wrong, and oh, the hat knows, you know, can see all. And I just I don't believe that. I think they can see what you are like at that moment, but they can't tell what you're going to be in the future. And I know there's some things that are like ingrained in us from birth, but you could still go through some kind of traumatic event or something that would change the way you thought about life, and that could change your whole personality.
Exactly.
And the hat can't foresee that, or at least I don't believe it can.
And I personally, I don't think that you would be open to accepting that idea if you haven't been in those type of situations to where you have experienced one of those events. Because it's kind of like, It's kind of like where people, and I hate whenever people do this. It's like they say, oh, depression is all in your head. Well, you don't know that. You know, you don't know it until you experience it, you know, or you it's just, it's kind of like being ignorant. That's just something that I don't think is right. So we had a great email on the subject from Lucy at Secrets of Dreams on Twitter, which was quite lengthy, but really has some great points that we want to share. And unfortunately, because of how lengthy the email was, we won't be able to read the entire thing. In the email, she says, "Hi, Hogwarts Radio. After listening to your podcast, I realized just how much people seem to identify with houses because of certain traits they see, and how it can be slightly prejudiced and judgmental, especially where poor Hufflepuff is concerned. And so I thought I'd share my opinions on A, what I think the houses mean and how it can be judged, and B, what I think the house system is really all about and how I feel it doesn't have much of a meaning at all. The house system isn't who you are, so why did it become so judgmental? As far as I can tell, the house system is really just a name for the main traits you possess or one trait that stands out amongst the others, allowing the hat to sort you. However, a person isn't made up of just those traits or automatically has those traits because they are in that house. People are complex and can be kind but have a manipulative streak, smart but lazy, brave but shy, a good person but somehow they make the wrong choice, and bam, they're on a dark path they can't get out of." And then she goes on, "Finally, after you leave Hogwarts, the real world doesn't care what house you were in at school. It's all about working hard and living, and you have to start making decisions for yourself and choose who you're going to be. This just shows how little the house system really means, and I believe they are simply groups to give the school some sort of order. That's just about it. It's just a name at the end of the day." What do we think of Lucy's points here?
I completely agree.
She nailed it.
I think.
Yeah.
I think the house is just someone, like when you go to school, you have someone to root for in sports, someone to hang out with. And in this case, you know, kind of your family, somewhere to live, someone to take classes with and to have a table to sit at when you go to meals. Like, I don't think it defines who you are, and that all came from the four founders. That was their thoughts on who they wanted to pick for their teams, but it has since evolved into who you are associated with, basically.
But isn't it kind of horrible that that kind of follows you around for the rest of your life? You know, what house you were in at Hogwarts?
I bet as an adult, it's less important, excuse me, until you probably have kids.
It might follow you, but it's more of kind of like an alma mater sort of thing.
I think it matters most if you're in Slytherin, and the other houses tend to not care as much as adults. But I feel like in the corporate world, like, oh, you went to Notre Dame, I went to Notre Dame. Like, it kind of can get you a leg up on the competition.
Right.
If perhaps you and whomever you're interviewing with went to the same alma mater.
Exactly.
But I feel like, and this is somewhat of a slam on my house, but like I feel like Slytherins would do that more than other houses.
And it's almost like being in a sorority or fraternity, even.
That too. Yeah.
It's kind of like a brotherhood or a sisterhood. You know, it's.
Yeah, you could use it in the future, like as an adult, for networking and stuff. Mm-hmm.
And Slughorn does just that. He's excellent at doing that. You know, in fact, we were just discussing this on the latest episode of Alohomora, which came out yesterday. We were discussing our first impressions of Slughorn and how he seems to be very proud of, you know, his networking and his connections, because, you know, he was a Slytherin at Hogwarts, and he had this, you know, this Slug Club, this exclusive club and all that stuff for the most popular.
But it was a club of people who weren't just Slytherins.
Right, right. But what I'm saying is, you know, he seems, even to the day that we meet him, and he's what, in his 50s or 60s, we can say, he's still very proud of being a Slytherin. And it's that was just my point with that, was that it continues throughout, you know, the rest of your life.
Yeah, it just gives you someone to identify with. Like, it's not, oh, you're in Gryffindor, so you have to be brave. I mean, you might be brave. That's kind of cool, but.
Do we think that prejudice kind of follows people around for the rest of their lives, though?
Because I think it would to some extent. It wouldn't label their whole life, I don't feel. Like, maybe between someone like Harry and Draco, their dissonance between those two But you see, like, Ernie McMillan, it's just like, oh, cool.
You're in Slughorn Hufflepuff. Was, like, in his 90s when we met him.
Oh, wow, are you serious?
On the wiki that I'm on, it says, because we don't have his exact birthday.
Right.
I just clicked something. It said between 1881 and 1921. So
wow.
I did 1900. And wouldn't he have started teaching Harry? Not, because he started teaching earlier on.
Right.
He taught Lily and them. Yeah, he taught in 1996. So he was around 96.
Which, wow. Wizards live longer than Muggles.
Yeah.
Relatively, it would have been maybe 50s, 60s.
What do we think about the Sorting Hat? She mentions the Sorting Hat selecting just kind of like one trait or one main trait that you possess that stands out. Do we think that's necessarily true?
No, because think about Neville. I mean, he wasn't exactly brave until, I think, to order. I mean, he stood up to Harry and Ron and Hermione in first year, but I don't think his bravery really came out until order.
Right.
But somehow the hat could see it in there.
Yeah, that's my point with that, is that
it's
not really it wasn't a trait that was, you know, really there. It was buried inside, it was hidden, and then something, you know, triggered it.
Do you think the hat can see recessed traits?
Well, that's my point, is that I believe that the hat can see those kind of recessed traits.
And it can see potential.
Yeah.
I know it can see potential because of what it says to Harry.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I guess that would be all right. I just don't like that people think that the hat can see everything. And by everything, I mean past, present, and future.
Yeah, no, I don't think it can.
It's not omniscient. It's just, it's a very good judge of character at the moment.
Okay, moving on to our next email. It comes from Susan, and she writes, I've always wondered why the many Weasleys live very crowded in the Burrow, which is also described as being in disrepair. I mean, they are magical. I know Hermione explains in Book 7 that there are laws for transfiguration. Do you think these laws prohibit the Weasleys from making their home bigger and or nicer? Thanks for the awesome podcast.
Probably. I don't think the Malfoys live in a manor just because, you know, they magicked it. I think there are laws against how big you can build stuff. And
well, there's that charm, that extension charm.
Right.
The TARDIS charm, as I like to call it.
The TARDIS charm.
Mr. Weasley puts on the car and everything. So they might could do that within their house. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, I would think within specific areas. But I think that the Weasleys are very content with living the way that they are, with their living situation. You know, they're a family that doesn't need much. They don't need a lot. They make do with what they have. And
it's just personal preference.
Yeah, yeah. You know, of course, it's always nice to live in a bigger place, but, you know, whenever it comes down to it, yeah, Marissa, it is just your personal preference. You know, they're happy. They're content. They don't need a lot.
I disagree with that.
Really?
I don't think they're as happy as they could be. I think there's probably stuff around the Burrow they could or would want to fix, but due to magic laws, they can't.
I mean,
a ghoul in their house they can't get rid of.
Hey, who are you going to call? Ghoul Busters. Do-do-do-do-do-do. Never mind.
They obviously didn't make that call.
I know they didn't.
I mean, yeah, because one of Gamp's laws is about money. So having a bigger, nicer house, I don't think that they could do, because it's not making things nicer, it's buying the nicer things.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, think they might could make it bigger, but I think it's also a literary plot device in that they're very crowded in the Burrow, but they're also a very close family, so I think it kind of shows that.
Right, right. And I'm sure if, you know, there was something wrong, such as a leaky roof or something like that, they're able to fix that with magic, so.
But, like, think about Harry when he comes in and he sees how they live, but it's one of his favorite places.
Right, exactly.
And he grew up in the Dursley house, which I'm sure had much nicer things, but.
And a confined space. The brooms. The cupboard under the stairs.
Dudley had, well, after he moved out of the cupboard, Dudley had, what, 3 whole bedrooms to himself or something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
So they had a big, nice house full of, I'm sure, nice things.
Mm-hmm.
And it that didn't really matter to Harry. He loved the burrow because of who lived there.
Yeah, I don't think it mattered. Well, okay, it does matter where you live. Yeah, but I mean, it doesn't matter. The way that I want to say this is it doesn't matter where you live or it doesn't matter what you do as long as it's who you're with, you know? Kind of something like that.
Love the one you're with.
Yeah, there you go.
And there's the singing for your show.
There we go. I was wondering where it was. I was wondering where it was.
I need a bingo card. So you check that out.
That would be cool. Every time you get a bingo, you get like a t-shirt or something. That'd be awesome. Anyway, let's go ahead and move on to another segment on our show. We haven't played it in a while. It's called This or That. Basically, we throw out two objects, two places, or two things in the wizarding world of Harry Potter. And we, you know, we talk about those and discuss which one we would like to have the most. So the first one this week is a broomstick or flu network. Which mode of transportation would you like to have? Gina, how about you?
I would probably say broomstick. Flu powder, just feel like there's a lot of room for error there.
It's like you sneeze and you could end up like in like Durmstrang or something, you know?
I don't know if I trust flu network, but I'm also a really bad driver, so I don't know if I could handle a broomstick.
I was going to say, oh, Fort Anglia, but that involves driving, so...
Kind of.
I think I lean more towards the flu network.
Really?
Because, well, timing-wise.
True.
If I want to go to, you know, London, it would take me 2 seconds versus
sitting on
a broomstick going across the pond. You get broom butt.
Broom butt.
I know, right?
I wonder if there's like a balm for that or something.
Probably.
I think I would have to choose broomstick because there's nothing, I would think there's nothing more exciting than the thrill of a broomstick, you know, flying on a broomstick through the air.
Yeah, and if you had a broomstick, you could play Quidditch.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah. So there's a bunch of things you could do with the broomstick. And, you know, with flu, I mean, one, you have to worry about buying the flu powder all the time. It's like, oh, I'm out of flu powder. I have to go and get it for like 10 galleons or something like that. However much it is. I'm sure it's a ridiculous amount. And with a broomstick, you know, all you have to worry about is time. If you have time to get there, then, you know, why not take a broom?
I'm going to go flu network because also if you have a bunch of luggage, it's kind of easier than strapping it on your broom.
That's true. That's very
Unless
true.
You use the TARDIS charm. I don't know. I'm going back and forth. I quit.
Use the extendable charm and put it in like a Ziploc bag or something like that, right?
Exactly.
It's like, where's your luggage? Oh, I have it here somewhere.
It's in one of these pockets. Like Hagrid.
Okay, here's a Fantastic Beast edition. Dragon in the Stock Exchange or King Kong on the top of the Empire State Building. What do we want to see in the film?
Dragon, every time. Always dragons.
Dragons.
I would rather see King Kong, but I don't really want either.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm on the fence here with this one. If I could, I would say dragon because I mean we've seen King Kong on the top of the Empire State Building before. Dragon in the Stock Exchange would be awesome.
The reason I want King Kong is I would want to see how King Kong relates to the Wizarding World, like
exactly. How
they had a hand in that.
Yes. Yes. Definitely. Well, I guarantee somebody lost their job over that one.
Yes.
You had one job.
You had one job.
You were the dinosaur supervisor. You had one job.
But could you see the dragon in the stock exchange as the reason for the crash in 1929?
That literal crash?
Right. Exactly.
No.
Another one. Rupert Grint or Tom Felton in Beauty and the Beast with Emma?
Tom Felton.
As who?
Lethal,
oh,
I'm afraid
pick.
I've been thinking.
A great
the prince at the end.
Oh, yeah. That's true. Oh, but I could see Rupert in that role.
Nope. I want Rupert to be Chip.
Who the hell is Chip?
Shut up, Terrence.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. My
the
bad.
Teacup.
I know. I'm just kidding. I'm thinking of LeFou. That was like, who the hell is Chip?
And then when they become a person at the end, like the kid that played his son in Deathly Hallows.
Oh, yeah.
Hugo.
Yep. Package deal.
I vote Devin Murray as LeFou.
Yes.
Anyway. Who looks like Cogsworth?
Who looks like Cogsworth? Jim Broadbent.
Robbie Coltrane.
That's true.
Robbie Coltrane could be Maurice. Oh.
Crazy old Maurice.
I think the biggest question here is who would play Gaston?
Gaston. That would be Victor Crumb. No, wait.
That could also be Chris Hemsworth.
Oh, whatever.
Chris can be the Beast and Liam can be Gaston.
Oh, no, other way around, because Chris is bigger than Liam.
I was thinking long hair.
Oh, true. Ugh, so hard.
So Rupert Grint or Tom Felton? Did we answer this? Did we just like skip
no.
to everybody
else? Oh, I said Tom Felton.
Okay.
I think we answered it. We said both.
Both. You can't have both. It's called this or that, not this, that. What do you think, Marissa?
Well, if I have to choose, I'm always going to choose Rupert.
Okay. See, I'm going to have to choose Tom because I can see him as, you know, maybe the prince at the end. I just want to see him snog Emma. Maybe he could play like a villager. I don't care what his role is. I do want to see him in it. Okay, so let's move on to this week's Fantastic Beast of the Week. Gina, who do we have lined up this week?
We have the Red Cap, which is a Ministry of Magic classification triple X. Competent wizards should be able to cope with this animal, with this beast, I should say. The Red Cap is a small dwarf-like creature. That's why you guys wanted me to read this, right?
No. That was me. No.
Anyway, it is a small dwarf-like creature that lives where blood has been shed, such as in the dungeons of castles, the potholes of old battlefields, or simply in holes underground. They attack those who have gotten lost, and though they are extremely dangerous to lone muggles, a wizard can repel them with charms and hexes. They can also be repelled by dousing them in beautification potion, as their temporary, quote-unquote, beautiful appearance is repulsive to them. Red caps are normally around 3 or 4 feet tall with red eyes and long, sharp nails. They are notable in the grounds of Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry, including the Forbidden Forest and the Forest of Dean, and all over Northern Europe. Red caps are less dangerous during their mating season as they become more interested in attacking each other than invaders of their territory.
So there we have it, the Red Cap. That's the Fantastic Beast of the Week. They said they remind me of like little... They do remind me of dwarfs.
Yeah.
I was thinking gremlins.
Yeah, kind of, sort of. They are...
Oh, their mating season sounds terrifying.
Yeah, right? What time of year is that? Like, can I get a season?
You know,
I
was reading on the on Red Caps a little bit, and they are possibly related to goblins.
I could see that.
So that does wrap up the show this week. We have a couple of plugs to talk about before we get out of here. Grayson and our friend Parker has recently started a movie. They've restarted the Moviegoers podcast. So we want to invite everybody to check that out. They are on the new and noteworthy section of iTunes in the TV and film section. Same place you can find Hogwarts Radio as well, and find Hogwarts Radio in the literature section there on iTunes as well. So be sure to subscribe to that podcast for some insight on movies and discussion if you're a big film buff, or if you just, you know, want to hear our other projects, just go ahead and go check them out. I listened to the first episode already, and I love it. I love the reboot of it. So definitely good stuff. Check it out, and follow them on Twitter, things like that. Mary also has a food blog, strawberrysmith.com, and you can follow her there for a bunch of fun recipes. And for couples, that's what she normally caters to, is just those that kind of an audience. But, you know, you can double it up for the entire family. And Marissa has already tried a recipe, and she...
Yes, I tried a soup recipe, and it was amazing.
Yes.
And she just put a rosemary and mascarpone mashed potatoes, I think. So that sounds super good.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to have to make some of those recipes The pictures make it look really, really good. So, in fact, I'm starving right now. I just may go over and grab a recipe after we finish the show here. We want to invite you to check that out, strawberrysmith.com. Anybody else have any other plugs? Marissa, where can people find you online?
At Marissa Kale on Twitter. That's pretty much it.
Oh, okay. Gina, what about you? Where can folks find you at?
PennyLane516 on Twitter.
And you can also, while you're following the rest of the hosts, follow Hogwarts Radio on Twitter. That's at Hogwarts Radio. We're twitter.com/Hogwarts Radio. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/official Hogwarts Radio. Instagram as well. Just search up Hogwarts Radio on Google and it'll bring everything that your heart could desire to know about the podcast. As well as a Google Plus page that is starting to go up. So we're going to start promoting different things on there, little tidbits and stuff about the hosts and just really things you can't find on any of our other social media outlets. So be sure to check that out within the next couple of weeks for some fun-filled bloopers or host plugs.
Are we going to share like circles that with Dan Rad?
Yeah, we're going to be in Dan's circle.
That's the only thing he does.
Right. I know it is. It is. That is a place where you can find Daniel Radcliffe online as well. And that's his official page is Dan Radcliffe on Google Plus. So be sure to check that out there. Apologies to the Bro Code, but we are out of time this week. Thank you so much for tuning in, everyone. Until next time, I'm Terrence Pinkston.
I'm Marissa Reynolds.
I'm Gina Marie.
We'll see you next time for episode 165.
That was bloody brilliant.
Codswallop.